Call the meeting to order. Clerk will take the roll, and Representative Nornis, have you looked at the minutes?
Yes, I have.
Are they okay? Would you like to move the minutes?
I'll move the minutes.
Thank you. Representative Nornis moves the minutes from the last meeting. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Downey must be here somewhere. Representative Downey, I will move House File 681, recommend that it pass and be referred to State Government Finance. And Representative Downey, you have an amendment. I believe it's been passed out. It's the A3 amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
And you, I hope you have a copy of it, and you can explain it?
I do.
Okay. Proceed.
Mr. Chair, and I might actually, if I could, defer to staff. Ms. Dyson, perhaps it's actually a technical amendment to conform to language that MMB needs for its internal processes, and then there is the insertion of an actual dollar amount where right now there's a space in the bill.
Ms. Dyson.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, that's basically it. There, the substantive change is on line 1.4, inserting the $20 million instead of the blank amount of the maximum outstanding debt. And the rest of it is there are suggestions from MMB that came from bond counsel on the language relating to the issuance of the bonds.
And Representative Downey, it's our understanding that State Government Finance will carry the debt on this. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, yes, there is a fiscal note attached to this bill that does show the debt service payments in our, it would be carried in our omnibus bill if we put it in there.
Okay, then very briefly, can you tell us why you need this money for your particular piece of legislation and how this came about as briefly as you can so we can proceed with the rest of our business?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate the chance to get this bill in here and appreciate your indulgence on it. This is a pilot program, members. The basic concept here is that whereas typically in state government we are appropriating, agencies and or external program providers are providing the services, and then perhaps on occasion we'll check in and verify whether or not the appropriation accomplished the outcomes and generated the things that we wanted. This bill is designed to change that process so that as compared to a direct appropriation, we create a pay-for-performance pool. And you can see a flow chart here. And from that pay-for-performance pool, we would only disperse funds to programs and agencies upon their demonstrated completion of or meeting certain outcomes. And those outcomes would need to be solid enough that we could book the revenue within the complex of state government and actually pay off the bond indebtedness that creates the pay-for-performance pool in the first place. So it's a unique mechanism to try and engage the private sector by investing in bonds to fund programs that we all deem are worthy, but doesn't do so and doesn't actually distribute any state money until and unless there are actually proven and demonstrable results that actually translate into a booked savings or a revenue stream at the state to pay off the bond indebtedness. So very simply, that's the mechanism. I'd also draw you briefly to your attention to a sheet which shows the nonprofits and the organizations from the most conservative to the most liberal end of the political spectrum, recognizing the challenge that we have in state government in terms of where funding will come from for programs and recognizing that the engagement of the private sector as investors into these programs is a very worthy pilot program indeed. The exact programs that would be funded in a pilot have not been determined. The advisory committee, the oversight committee that's established in the bill would actually determine that. There are a handful of programs that are kind of in the mix right now, workforce development, housing, potentially higher education and potentially some early literacy programs that have well-established metrics and could handle the cash flow of needing to provide the service before actually getting paid for their outcomes. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'd stand for questions or clarification.
Representative Carlson.
Okay. I had a couple of questions. You know, I view this as the equivalent of Minnesota printing money. We don't have a printing press, but by issuing these bonds and using them for programs that would normally be funded through the general fund, this would be the Minnesota equivalent. We had a lot of discussion about appropriation bonds 2 years ago when Representative Houseman chaired the Capital Investment Committee and I chaired the Finance Committee. And Governor Pawlenty was the first, to my knowledge, to approach the issue of appropriation bonds. And if you'll recall, that came up on the House floor and was voted down. I think just a handful of members supported it. It was way over 100 votes. This is a very new direction to go, and one that I think is very risky in terms of the precedent that sets. And the other thing that came out during our discussions last biennium, when Governor Pawlenty came through with his, or came up with his proposal for $1 billion, was that these bonds are extremely hard to sell. That's one issue. There are some states that have tried this, and they're hard to sell. The other thing is there's no assurance what the interest rate would be. I know you've put out a chart where you feel that the payback would offset the cost, but I really think they're very risky and they're very hard to sell. So my question, have you looked at what other states have attempted to do and what their success has been with issuing appropriation bonds? And then you can correct me if I'm wrong, but has this ever been done in the history of the state of Minnesota, where we're using bonds to appropriation bonds to supplement the general fund?
Representative Downey.
Mr. Chair, maybe a brief comment in response to your question, and if I could, I have a gentleman who is bond counsel from Fagery and Benson who helped develop the language of the bill with staff. Perhaps he'd be better positioned to explain exactly how the bond mechanisms work, how they'd be rated, the interest rate, and other states' experiences. I want to directly contrast this from the revenue bond that was proposed in the last biennial budget cycle. That was largely to fund the internal operations and to supplement the general fund. This is, frankly, to recognize that the reduced spending that we are going to experience in the human services arena and more broadly out of state government, the unavoidable demographic and revenue trends that we see in state government is of necessity going to result in lower spending. So there is no other source in terms of the public sector and the nonprofit sector for increased expenditures other than the private sector. And these are bonds that would be sold at market in a kind of vanilla way. And I'll allow Mr. Rochel to explain the kind of bonding component of it. But I do want to make sure people realize this is not us borrowing to fund state government. This is us leveraging the bonding capacity of state government to engage the private sector in funding nonprofit entities that, frankly, can demonstrate enough of a return on investment to pay off the debt service. And if they can't, the amount of the performance pool that the bonds create sits in the performance pool and is not paid out. So the risk to the state is actually quite small if those nonprofits don't perform. If they do, and we can book a savings in state government through the tax revenue generated by somebody who's no longer in prison, or the lack of incarceration for somebody, or proven bookable savings that would pay off of these bonds, that's the mechanism we're trying to create here. Certainly not borrowing in the least to fund our normal operations. So with that, a quick explanation of the bond mechanisms, if we could.
Go ahead and identify yourself for the tape, and then.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Steve Rossold, R-O-S-H-O-L-T. I'm a lawyer at Fagery & Benson, specializing in public finance. I think the answer to the question that was raised, first of all, in Minnesota's experience, there are more most recently the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency issued in 2009, and also earlier this year issues for nonprofit housing that are payable primarily from appropriations. Many other states, not all states to be sure, but there are many other states who issue bonds payable from annual appropriations, primarily because of restrictions on incurrence of general obligation state debt. In terms of the future, I'm not sure that it's expected that the pool for reimbursement for performance contracts would consist of bonds. It could consist of other funds, as if the program is demonstrated to be successful.
Go ahead.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, when you mentioned the Minnesota Housing Agency, I've got a question of staff. Do either of you know what kind of bonds those were and what kind of guarantee they had? Were they full faith and credit?
Ms. Dyson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson, the nonprofit housing bonds are bonds issued by the state agency, and the promise of the state is a standing appropriation. But it, as Mr. Rothschild said, or Representative Downey said, these are general fund appropriations that could be canceled. So it's comparable. And similarly, the University of Minnesota Stadium bonds and the biomedical science facilities were funded the same way, with a standing appropriation of a certain amount to help the agency pay the bonds.
Representative Carlson. Mr. Chairman, but those, in those instances, there were facilities being built, housing, a stadium. In this case, it's just really being used to supplement the general fund. When you mentioned the housing agencies, I would view it that at least there's some collateral there, the properties and so on that are being purchased. Here there would be absolutely no collateral. It's a very different approach in terms of what the money is being used for, and that's my point. The marketability of an appropriations bond, maybe the witness, I didn't get your name, could comment on that, because the hearings we had 2 years ago was that they were very difficult to market in other states.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson, I am virtually certain that those housing finance agency bonds were rated AA based on the confidence that investors had that the appropriations would be forthcoming. Those are not, I don't recall the exact amount. It's on the order of $20 million, and I think another issue is on the order of $15 million. But in terms of collateral, I'm also confident that there was no other collateral pledged to those bonds. So I think it indicates a confidence in the investor community that that the bonds would be repaid. Whether that's justified or not, I'm not sure, but the history of similar bonds has been a successful one.
Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, my recollection, and it's been a while since the housing bill went through the Finance Committee that I was chairing the last few years, but my thought is that, and I don't know if Representative Clark remembers or not, but were those, or maybe staff, were those revenue bonds? I know we use revenue bonds for dormitories, but then the guarantee is, or there's a facility being built, namely dormitories, and then the debt is retired off the essentially the rent that the students pay when they live in the dormitories. And we do provide for both the public and private colleges in the case of dormitories and in the issuance of those bonds. But I think they're revenue bonds. But I'm willing to be corrected because it's been a couple of years by whomever.
Ms. Duros, do you want to try that?
Mr. Chair and Representative Carlson, those bonds were considered appropriation bonds, but they were backed by additional revenue, I believe, through the Housing Finance Agency. And one of the differences between those bonds and the bonds that are being proposed is that the Housing Finance Agency bonds were tax-exempt bonds, and these would be taxable bonds. And that's because the Housing Finance Agency bonds were on capital, and this is would not be a capital project.
So then we'd be paying, in all likelihood, a higher, Mr. Chairman, interest rate.
Mr. Chair and Representative Carlson, yes. And in the fiscal note, the interest rate that is expected on these is 6.5%.
Representative Carlson.
I think I'll stop at this point, Mr. Chairman. I know Representative Hausman had some questions. So.
Well, Representative Scalzi is on the list. Did you want to?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering if you can tell us, or if someone else here could tell us, how appropriation bonds would impact the debt management guidelines.
Representative Downey?
Mr. Chair, I would defer to staff.
Ms. Sewers.
Mr. Chair and Representative Scalzi, appropriation bonds, or these bonds, would impact both the first debt management guideline and the second debt management guideline because they are backed by their tax-supported debt.
Representative Scalzi? Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to summarize what we learned over the last few years, and we did really national studies, and we looked at what bond houses had said and others. It was fairly clear, and that's why I think support for this concept failed to materialize, that because they're appropriation bonds not backed by the full faith and credit of the state, they do have higher interest. I didn't realize how much higher until you noted what the fiscal note says, and therefore not marketable because of the risk to the bondholder. This is conjecture, in a sense, what revenue might be there to pay for them. And so if that revenue doesn't materialize, obviously the bondholders are at some point going to lose. Somebody's going to lose in this investment. But the concerns I have are maybe closer to our budget. My understanding is that with the new debt service guidelines, that all debt at some point is quantified. So whatever we do in this area means we do less for higher education and wastewater infrastructure and all of that. And it seems to me it's not a terribly fiscally responsible thing to do because, and I don't, I'm sort of surprised that all of these people signed on because we have just substantially raised the cost of this kind of program. So if it was a pilot program, okay, let's try it, and we've got this amount of money, but the moment you bond for it, you repay with both principal and interest. And so you've immediately sort of raised the cost of this program, a worthy program. And so I think cumulatively, it was a concept that no one felt terribly comfortable using in the last few years. I would at some point, and I don't know where this is going after this, I'm hoping that MMB will have the opportunity to give us some advice on this. I think this goes to state government. What was the motion?
Representative Downey.
To state government finance.
At some point, I would assume that that legislators ought to hear some advice from MMB.
Mr. Chair, if I
Representative Downey.
I don't want to overly consume the committee's time, but you're raising some important points, and I think the most important one is to let go of past notions of appropriation bonds being used in essence like the federal government to borrow to cover our operating expenses. You'll notice that after we would issue bonds, the proceeds to be put into a performance pool. That performance pool never gets distributed to the recipients unless and until they have demonstrated and proven the production of the outcomes that create a bookable event in the complex of state government that can go to pay the appropriation bonds. And how many of us have heard many worthy organizations talking about their return on investment, some of them in the 700%. We even hear some that, you know, have a 19-to-1 return on investment. Very clearly, that's a return on investment that the private sector would be interested in capitalizing on. And so this is the state leveraging a mechanism at a time when it doesn't have the money to appropriate for lots of different things to leverage private capital to fund those programs and pay off that private capital with potentially even a profit to that performance pool. And as the testifier said, perhaps once the pump is primed and this return on investment vehicle proves itself, there would be other interest in funding that performance pool as compared to simply just leveraging the bonding authority of the state. This is also a permissive bill. This is not mandating the issuance of $20 million of appropriations bonds. It is allowing the oversight committee with the commissioner to have up to that amount of authority to issue $20 million worth of bonds. It's not an actual appropriation of or a commitment to the bonds at this point.
And Mr. Chair, I would just give you my reason for anxiety. Transportation committee has worked with a lot of communities of color on some of the employment issues. One of the complaints we heard from the community was their cynicism about the training programs. And they said, we'll go to the training programs and we're full of hope, but there's at the end of the day, there's no job. And what concerns me is this summary that Twin Cities Rise takes all the risk. And so are we failing to fund a program that is worthy, funding it directly and giving this tool where we've shifted the risk?
Representative Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There are a number of nonprofits, and you can see the list, including United Way, that are very willing to sign up for this, very convinced of their ability to generate this kind of return on investment. And if you think about what will happen in the nonprofit community, frankly, those that can't demonstrate effectiveness probably aren't going to be participating. Those that are maybe in the middle are going to have a goal to shoot for, and the highest performing nonprofits are the ones that we will fund. And if you think about the hardest to serve with the hardest return on investment, in many ways, this kind of pooling and driving towards performance actually drives our investments to the hardest to serve. The people with the highest return on investment are the ones that the nonprofits are going to go after. So there's a really important, I think, impact out in the nonprofit community beyond giving us confidence that we're directing our state dollars to the programs that are actually working and producing the outcomes that we're all wanting to fund.
Representative Bills.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Downey, I'm just trying to get my head around this more because I started looking at items that we had bonded for, and because what I was thinking with a $1.1 billion debt service, that clearly then you should be able to reach back through time and look at those items that you bonded for, and there should now be $1.1 billion in revenue coming in to pay for that debt service. But now I won't. So something that I've stopped doing because it was just insanity, But is this the same thinking then but you're just trying to do this with bonding authority?
Representative Downey.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Bills, actually I don't think that's insanity at all. I think we should be doing that on every appropriation and every bonding bill we do. And Representative Banyan and I have partnered on a bill that I authored last year that Chair Hausman was gracious enough to give me a hearing on that would have required a return on investment, kind of a private sector capital investment ROI model be produced with every bonding request that comes before your committee. And I even had, as part of that return on investment model, the novel idea that perhaps some of the folks that are benefiting from the bonding might actually pay the bonds back or pay back what they have leveraged from the state, at least in part. So I don't think you're crazy at all, and I think this bill drives exactly towards that on a set of what today we are just appropriating and hoping in many cases, or appropriating and kind of checking up on in many cases.
Representative Bills?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Downey, then if the when the money is sitting in the pool and if there would be no outflow out of that pool, who would be paying for the payment to the individuals who have purchased into the program or have bought those, purchased those bonds?
Representative Downey.
Mr. Chair, the bonding mechanism, and I can defer to Mr. Rothschild here, but it is a traditional bonding mechanism. It's a vanilla bond sold out in the market. You and I, if we are purchasers and bondholders, would receive the proceeds of that according to the schedule of the bond. If for whatever reason the, and that's the state's obligation, if for whatever reason the nonprofits actually don't perform, then the principal is still sitting in the performance pool. So the risk to the state, frankly, is the interest payments on those bonds, and obviously there could be some investment management of the performance pool as well to mitigate that risk as well. So it is a pilot program, members. I think from everything I've learned in working through this with the nonprofits and with the agencies, I think it's a really worthy pilot. It allows up to $20 million. You know, it would probably be done incrementally with a series of pilot programs that have an ability to carry the cash flow to keep their operations going and generate that return on investment to pay the bonds to prove the concept. And if we're wrong, then there was some risk to the state. But think about what that risk would have been if we had just pushed $20 million out the door on the assumption that that return and those kind of outcomes were being generated. At this point, we at least push the risk, as Chair Hausman said, we push a lot of the risk to the providers, to the program.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Clark, you're next, but just so the Chair does not forget, we have before us the A3 amendment, so I'm going to take a vote on that way. We continue to discuss the bill as amended. So all those in favor of the A3 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The amendment is adopted. So, Representative Clark, you can talk to the bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't think this changed my question. I was trying to read this quickly. It sounds like the testimony has all been about nonprofit using this mechanism, but is there anything in here that prevents for-profit organizations from deciding to jump on the bandwagon here?
Representative Downey.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Clark, that is a good question. I mean, off the top of my head, I don't believe so.
What do you think about that, Mr. Clark. Chairman and Representative Downey?
Representative Downey.
I think the original intention and the discussions have all been with nonprofits who are in this area. I don't know why we would limit it to nonprofits. I think for-profit entities or some in the disability community, other areas that could be very worthy recipients of this.
Representative Clark?
Mr. Chairman, I think one of the important points that was made by Representative Carlson first, and I know our witness here is talking about the Housing Finance Agency using appropriation bonds. I think it is important to note the difference between something that constructs something with bonding that then is part of you know, the value and it's the equity and so on, as compared to a service. And I'm just wondering how you want us to think about that. If there is a failure and there's no way to recapture, or are you building into this plan a way to recapture any of the dollars should it be a failed endeavor?
Representative Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The debt service would be appropriated as part of the normal biennial budgeting process. And as I mentioned, if there is a lack of performance, the risk to the state is essentially the interest on the principal and the performance pool. If there is performance and the outcomes are generated and there is bookable activity that the state can generate to pay off the appropriations bonds, then there is zero risk to the state.
Representative Clark?
Mr. Chair, I don't think I quite understand. So could you give me an example, Representative Downey, maybe of a service that you, just give me an example of a service you'd like us to bond for.
Representative Downey.
Mr. Chair, and I just want to be clear, it would be the Oversight Committee and the Commissioner that would determine which entities to actually set into a contract with for the performance pool. So it wouldn't be me or my preference. It would be them taking a look at the organizations, the kind of services they provide, and whether they can demonstrate the outcomes that we're looking for in a way that actually produces a hard savings to the state that can pay off the bonds. I'll give you one example, and I think it's the only example in state government. I could be wrong, but Twin Cities Rise is a workforce program that specializes in working with ex-cons, those in probationary situations, a real high level of success, and that's really what this bill is patterned after. The state does not pay Twin Cities Rise unless and until one of their clients actually receives a job, and then a second payment when they've held that job with health care benefits for a year. And they have actually been able to track the tax revenue, the personal income tax revenue to the state by virtue of their program. They've been able to track the avoided costs and the correction side and all of the other human services programs that those people might be signed up for had they not gone through that program and achieved that job. And they actually contend that they have a 700% return on investment for the dollars that the state spends with them. And so in cases like that where you can actually track down to the Social Security number the personal income tax revenue coming in to pay off the debt service on the bonds, those are the kinds of programs that we would be looking at. So some kind of a demonstrated return on investment.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Clark.
Yeah, I'm familiar with the RISE model.
Yeah.
I've supported it. I'm wondering if the people at Twin Cities RISE and some of the other, I'm looking at all the nonprofit leaders here who actually get appropriations from, for example, one of the committees I serve on, if they would prefer to have us forego the appropriation and instead pass an appropriation bond for this year for their work that they want to do. And I guess that might be helpful to hear from some of them if any of them are in the audience.
Representative Dowdy.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know if they are here. I think our testifiers today were more focused on the more technical components of the bonding instruments. They did appear, United Way, Mr. Rothschild from Twin Cities Rise, Center of the American Experiment, Citizens League. I'm trying to think who else testified in favor of the bill, and you can see the supporters. Interestingly, the nonprofits have been tracking return on investment and building models for this, I think, far in advance of state government. And they're pretty darn convinced that this is a great model for them. The question as to whether they'd prefer one model over the other, I think, is a question for them, not for me.
Representative Clark.
Just a final follow-up, and if you can't answer it today, it's okay. But I guess I would be interested to know if that is your goal, that we replace some of the appropriations that we have in some of these committees with this kind of bonding. Is that your eventual goal?
Representative Downey.
Mr. Chair, I think it's an unavoidable conclusion for all of us who look at the demographic trends and the projections of state revenue growth that we are going to have the unavoidable circumstance where plenty of worthy programs we're not able to fund them through traditional appropriation mechanisms. And if the private sector is willing to purchase bonds to help fund them, leveraging the bonding authority of the state, that seems like a worthy program to at least pilot and see if it works. And members, I will issue the statement here. There is no guarantee that it would work. This would be the first program of its kind tried in the United States, but it could be a really worthy pilot. And if it works, the power of it is I think, really extensive when you think about it for higher education and other areas as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I'll conclude. I just want to say that I do intend to contact the people on this whose names are on this paper and ask them to answer that question about if they would prefer us this year to provide this means of supporting their projects rather than the appropriations that are before so many of our committees.
Representative Downey, how many committees has this been to?
Mr. Chair, it was through state government reform and state government finance.
And they've talked about the policy and the chances and the risks and everything else involved.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, we had a more extensive discussion of the programs and the actual kind of principle and policy objectives of the bill as compared to here where we're focusing a little more on the technical aspects of the bond issuance and repayment.
Representative Hayden.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Downey, I think Representative Clark pretty much tackled kind of my line of questioning, but I know a lot of these organizations that have signed up and said that they would be willing to participate in this endeavor. I was just thinking about Representative Hausman's analogy that if, for instance, something happened like the worst economic crisis of our generation happens again, and these organizations somehow trained people, got them ready to work, but the jobs just wasn't there, right? Especially some of the high-risk and at-risk folks that these organizations work with. I'm trying to work my way through, and I'm not in the best I can. I'm trying to figure out what would happen if they weren't able to demonstrate that they were able to kind of book a savings to the state over time because there weren't the opportunities out there for people to have, of no fault of the organizations. So if the organizations take the risk and they don't get paid and these organizations go away, what happens to the capacity of organizations that are working hard to work with these individuals?
Representative Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Hayden. That, I think, is one of the primary features of this kind of a program, in that it would, of necessity, focus the program providers on making sure that if they're going to incur the cost to train somebody for a job, that a job actually exists. And I think today we might be a little more inclined to simply pay people to deliver job training, not knowing whether that's really enhancing that individual's opportunity to get a job or whether there's even jobs out there. So I think this provides a nice kind of mechanism out in the program provider world to really focus on what actually is going to produce the outcomes we want. In that particular case, a job, as compared to somebody who's trained in some skill that isn't perhaps even relevant to the job market or the job circumstance of that time.
So, Mr. Chair, so I'm starting to get it now. So part of this is it helps nonprofits figure out, or helps us figure out, if the nonprofits are doing the work that they say that they're telling us to do. So if they aren't, they wouldn't get the appropriation, right? I mean, that's kind of part of the process. So there's a little bit of a weeding out going through. There's some ulterior there's a sub agenda. I'm trying to do my best without impugning your integrity, because I think you're bringing it for the right reason. So I'm trying to choose my language wisely, Representative Downey.
We
go back and forth a little bit of state government, but I really am trying to understand. There just seems to be, and I'm new to this committee, so if you would indulge me, there just seems to be a little more going on here than simply getting good organizations and appropriation. There seems to be somewhat of an agenda to say, should we be giving these organizations money, because we're not sure if they're doing the work in which they said that they are doing. And so the other question, and I know we have to move on, Mr. Chair, is I see that there are all of the ex-CEOs that are in favor of this and foundation heads that are in favor of this, that says that this might be a great idea. So I guess the question, and unfortunately they didn't attend this important hearing today, would be, why wouldn't they invest directly in the organizations? Why wouldn't they hold the risk? If they think it is a great idea and they have resources, why wouldn't they pull their money together to fund these organizations and then use the very same mechanism that you want to imply in this bill? If we're really going to kind of look to the private market, why don't we really look to the private market? So I hear a lot around here to help fund these organizations that essentially are doing great work, like Twin Cities Rise, Volunteers of America, United Way, PPL, all great organizations that I work with and have helped for appropriations here. Why wouldn't they want to maybe pool their money and take the risk to support these organizations and get government out of it entirely?
Representative Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Great points, Representative Hayden, and I think we're actually saying the same thing, kind of maybe in a roundabout way. The intention, or the premise of this bill, is that there's not going to be enough money in the public sector, and there's not going to be enough money in the philanthropic nonprofit sector to fund the needs and the worthy programs. And so this is an attempt to actually attract private investment capital to be deployed to good purposes that actually have a return on investment to the state. So it's intended to be an additive mechanism. And to your previous point about, I don't know exactly what wording you used, weeding out or kind of proving certain nonprofits, I think there's a recognition that there's a set of high-performing nonprofits that are ready to jump into this game right now. They've been working very hard to build models that prove the return on investment of their programs, and they're very convinced that this program would work great for them. There's another set of programs that probably haven't done the level of work that they have that can elevate their game. And then, you know what, maybe there are some that either should elevate or not participate. And I think that is the reality of this program, and I don't think that's a hidden agenda. I think if you ask the nonprofit community, you hear that exact same answer, that there's a way to really optimize our dollars into the highest performing programs.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Downing.
Bills.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just had a couple more questions that came up as others had their questions. How does this, and maybe this is a question for staff, but how does this interface then with the debt guidelines that the state has? Will it influence or affect, say it goes, you know, very well? I mean, will that influence our 3%, 6%, whatever it is, of if people start, you know, if this is a direction forward? I was just curious if anyone had gamed that.
Representative Downey, do you want to answer that, or should we go to staff?
Staff can answer, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chair and Representative Bills, the debt management guidelines are specifically related to tax-supported debt. So the performance of the program, the guidelines and where we're at in terms of those wouldn't be dependent on the program and its performance, because they would be dependent on how quickly we pay off the bonds.
Representative Bills.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And then another question on another note here. Would there still, these programs that we discuss, would there still be programs such as those that are traditionally funded? So it's not like we're eliminating them from the purview of a general fund or any committee. Is that, am I correct in that?
Representative Downey.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bills, the initial intention is that it would be additive and not supplanting. One can envision all kinds of scenarios down the road, but whether the program succeeds or not will drive whether we move further in that direction or not.
Okay. Wonderful. Mr. Chairman, one more. And then these funds that people would invest in those bonds, that's coming out of the loanable funds market, right? Those are actual dollars that people are investing in these programs.
Mr. Chairman, yes.
So, Mr. Chairman, so then with current yield curves and that we have printed money at the federal level and a certain anticipated rate of inflation being out there, a program like this might actually help sponge up some of that excess liquidity. So it would, I can only say it might be the opposite of printing money. It might help to soak up that potential for inflation that is out there, especially with a higher interest rate.
Representative Downey.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bills, I think you have described it at a level that I probably don't have the competence to answer, but I think what you said kind of mirrors some of my own perception of how this would work in the broader investment market and how it would work in terms of state government funding as well.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mine is just one final comment. I think the irony of these two bills today, now we're going to, in the other one, we're going to argue that debt is bad and let's cancel a lot of this because we really can't afford it. But it sort of feels like in this one we're saying to these nonprofits, debt might be a really good thing for you. It's sort of two views of what we're encouraging here.
Mr. Chairman, you could call the chair indecisive. Representative Downey, did you want to comment?
I do, actually. My own opinion is that if those capital investment projects could demonstrate their return on investment and if those project owners were actually willing to commit some funds to repay the debt service, I think you'd have a totally different discussion on the capital bill as well.
And, Mr. Chair, I would be really tempted to put Representative Lanning on the spot to see whether Moorhead would feel that way.
Representative Lanning is busy right now. Representative Downey, any final comments before we vote?
No, thank you for the great discussion, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Drazkowski, did you want to? Would like to vote on this, so just as brief as you can.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Downey, for bringing the bill. Interesting discussion. I think the value in this is it may allow us to move away from some of our open-ended liabilities that we have in funding some of these programs, and I think that's the beauty of the design of this. I'm just curious, Representative Downey, in the design of this board that is going to be overseeing this, can you tell us about your vision for the coordination of those programs that are successful and for us to be able to back off some of those liabilities in our more open-ended general fund liabilities that we have here in state government?
Representative Downey, keep your vision short.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I don't know that I have a really clear sense of what the future holds for this. If it works, and we can actually pay off these bonds and accomplish some of the good ends that I think we all share here, we've got a mechanism whose application could be much broader in state government.
Representative Rukavina.
Well, Mr. Chair, and Representative Downey, you're probably 10 times the capitalist I am, and I'm probably the world's worst capitalist at the Capitol, but I'm smart enough to know not to buy one of these appropriation bonds.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple of things. First of all, if Representative Hausman was referring to flood mitigation, DNR tells us that for every dollar that we invest in flood mitigation, we save $4 in future damages. So in terms of a return on investment, that's a pretty good return. We can have another discussion about whether return on investment works on university facilities, which I think is a real problem to try and figure that out. But the other thing I wanted to say is to thank Representative Downey for bringing this bill forward. In state government finance, we had very good discussion about this, and I think it's fair to say that there's a strong interest in giving this a whirl, this pilot, and I think it has the potential of helping us to find a better way to meet the needs that are out there. So I support this this bill.
Mr. Speaker, I do need to clarify. I absolutely believe our capital expenditures have a return on investment. What I was referring to is when they have a return on investment, should you pay it back? Because I think that's the point we were getting at here.
Seeing no further discussion, the chair will renew his motion. House File 681, as amended, will be passed with recommendation to state government finance. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No. The bill passes. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members.
Okay, the chair will move House File 1232. And it is the intention to pass it to Ways and Means. And you have a couple of amendments in your packet. First, I'll go to the A2 amendment. That would be the author's amendment. And I want to add this to get the bill in the shape I want. And a brief description of the amendment. Some of the language is technical, but the... wait a minute, do I have the right amendment? It's just the right amendment.
A5.
Do I have the right one?
Yeah.
A2, right? It's the A5. Evidently, I have the wrong one. Here it is. No, we want the A2. Yeah. Do you have it? A2?
A2,
yes. Sorry, I thought it was passed out. Ms. Dyson, would you want to explain this amendment while they're passing it out?
Mr. Chair and members, the A2 amendment replaces Section 2 of the bill, and it incorporates concepts that are in the existing Section 2, but it's basically saying that during the biennium, the Commissioner of Management and Budget needs to determine that there have been $70 million less in the amount forecasted for debt service than what was forecast. I didn't word that very well, but anyway, it's looking for $70 million in debt service savings during the biennium. And to determine the amount, the commissioner is to take into account savings that result if the bond appropriations bill or enacted during this session is less than the forecasted $140 million amount. There's a savings there. That has to be taken into account first. and then the cancellations that have been enacted and corresponding bond sale authorization reductions that are enacted during this session. And then the commissioner is directed to issue refunding bonds to achieve savings. And then finally, if that doesn't get you to $70 million, the commissioner is directed to delay or cancel additional bond appropriations and reduce the bond sale authorizations that correspond to those appropriations.
Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To that last point, we've just made the commissioner, the new capital investment chair, they get to decide what to cancel. Is that how I understand that? We cede that authority to the commissioner?
Representative Hausman, you could form that opinion. Any other discussion? All those in favor of the A2 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
No.
Motion prevails. Okay, now to House File 1232 as amended. There is one more amendment. That's the A5. I believe that's the Drazkowski amendment. Representative Drazkowski, if you'd like to speak to your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move the DD-A05 amendment. It suspends the construction of the Central Corridor Light Rail pending supplementing the final environmental impact statement to address business loss concerns and also supplementing the environmental impact statement to meet the requirements set out in the United States District Court, District of Minnesota and St. Paul branch of the NAACP versus the United States Department of Transportation, which related again to business concerns and the neighborhood impact of this particular development. And also requires that the cost of the environmental impact statement be covered by the Federal Transit Authority, Mr. Chair.
Any discussion? Representative Hausman.
Well, Mr. Chair, I know that to the bill there are people prepared to testify, and I would just simply ask whether they want to testify separately to this amendment because it is really a different issue. Oh, I'm terribly sorry.
Well, Representative Hausman, while you fix your phone, I think they can still testify to this specifically once we incorporate it into the bill or amend it into the bill. Representative Carlson, while Representative Hausman is busy.
Mr. Chairman, one of the things that we've tried to be careful with is to have fiscal notes and what the cost of something is, and this amendment clearly has costs, a new environmental impact statement, but probably the biggest cost is that construction is suspended, and when you look at the magnitude of this project, the cost of the suspension and how prices will be going up rather than down. When we've dealt with capital projects, we've usually found out that when you delay a project, it's going to cost you more in the end. And I would be interested if Representative Drazkowski has looked at at the cost implications or if there's a fiscal note. I don't think we should vote any bill out of committee with a high-cost amendment like this without knowing what the both direct and indirect costs would be.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just point out, members, that, again, the amendment directs that the environmental impact statement be paid for by federal funds and that if you read line 1.24, 1.25, you'll see that if the Federal Transit Authority has not agreed to partner with the Met Council to take care of the costs associated with that EIS by April 1st, which is only a few days away, that the construction will be halted. So the uncertainty around the costs, Representative, is very small between here and the April 1st deadline.
Mr. Chairman, maybe we'll pick up on some of this during the testimony, but directing that the cost be paid for out of federal funds. Some of us had conversations about other issues involving the Central Corridor and found that it was very difficult at this point in time to give any direction to the federal government in terms of how those dollars might be spent in terms of their approval of it. So that becomes one issue. I did read your amendment, so I know what you're attempting to do in that regard. But then there is the other cost, and that's the delayed construction while you're going through that process in terms of increasing the cost of the overall project. So I guess at this point I just wanted to point out that those, I think, are two important issues, and maybe the testimony will give us more clarification on that.
Representative Hausman, I'll go back to you first.
Just my question was simply whether people in the audience wanted to testify separately to the amendment or after it's added to the whole bill, and it sounds like they're saying they'll wait for the whole bill.
Representative Clark.
Mr. Chairman, I was just both listening to the author of the amendment and then reading the language on 1.10 to 1.15, and I'm wondering if you would just explain a little bit more about what that provision is about, please.
Representative Drozdowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Was it 1.20?
1.10.
1.10 to 1.
Starting after the number 2.
Okay. Yeah. There was a court case in federal district court, Representative Clark, that included the the NAACP St. Paul branch was the lead plaintiff. And the issues in that case were the legacy of the African American Rondo neighborhood and its impact on the project's construction that it would have on that particular neighborhood and on the businesses in the neighborhood. That was what was being challenged. So it's somewhat consistent with number one above it.
Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I've been following your bill as we've looked at this 681, and this is a brand new wrinkle, trying to do lots of things. But, Mr. Chair, wouldn't this bill be out of order? I mean, this is the Capital Investment Committee. This would have to go to Commerce. It'd have to go to Environment and maybe to the U.S. Congress. I mean, because we're expending Federal Transit Authority funds that have not been earmarked for this. So I'm just kind of wondering how the heck we could put this on this bill. It has no meaning when you're talking about selling bonds and canceling bonds. This is a final stop. This bill should have been here 2-3 years ago going through the process. We can't be jumping in at the last minute and saying that now this matters. It's too late.
Well, Representative Scalzi, it always matters, and I'm not an attorney, so I can't tell you if this is the right time, or yesterday, or the day after tomorrow is the right time. But
so then, could we hear from Ms. Dyson? Mr. Chair, could we hear from Ms. Dyson an opinion on if this is in the right committee, or if
Ms.
this
Dyson
pertains
would like
to bonding?
That would be fine, Ms. Dyson. We're all waiting.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Scalzi, I think I am going to decline because that really is a decision of the chair and the members and leadership.
Representative Scalzi.
I guess maybe I don't have an amendment, of course, but we should amend this amendment and rule it out of order. I mean, I guess maybe I would propose that. I think it's out of order in the Capital Investment Committee on File 681, House File 681.
So are you?
I guess I'll make that a motion, that this amendment is clearly out of order in this Capital Investment Committee at this time.
Representative Scalzi, I'm going to contemplate that for a minute because I don't know that that motion would work in this committee. Now, Representative Carlson, you have a lot of history here, or Representative Hausman, I think that motion is out of order. I think the thing to do would be to vote the amendment down. I'm only trying to be fair here and not make a mistake. I'm seeing no comments, so I'm going to make the decision that your motion is out of order and we're going to vote this amendment up or down. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had a different track of questions. Representative Drazkowski had brought up the district court action, and my question is that a settled action, or is it currently in litigation? Is it currently under appeal? I don't know the answer to that, and we generally don't take legislative action when there's something that's currently under litigation. So if I could get an answer to that question.
Representative Drazkowski.
Representative Hansen, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hansen, I caught most of your question, but you were talking about the particular court case cited in the bill. I have an article about it. It sounds like, from what I can gather, the court case was decided, but the amendment is drafted to reflect those same concerns that were brought up in that particular court case. I will read further.
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, is the case, so it's decided, but is it under appeal?
Representative Drazkowski.
Not that I can see, Mr. Chair.
Representative Drazkowski, is that a no, it's not under appeal, or you don't know?
It appears as from the information I have, Mr. Chair, that it is not under appeal, but I am not 100% certain, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, I'm not a lawyer either, but I think we have to have something more substantive of rather than what we've read in the paper.
Representative Hansen, I hate to interrupt, but the chair for the moment is going to lay this amendment over till tomorrow. So we won't pass this bill out today. We'll pass it out tomorrow. So I'm just going to play it on the safe side. And if we discover anything different, we'll correct it tomorrow and still get it to Ways and Means in a timely fashion. So, Representative Hausman?
Could I, Mr. Chair, just add one more, if you're checking on things anyway, back to Representative Scalzi's point about the appropriateness of this committee and this amendment. Representative Morrow in Transportation Committee raised the question with Representative Beard as to the number of cancellations of previously authorized transportation bonding initiatives. And he said, would it be your intention to call those to the Transportation Committee if in the Capital Investment Committee they're canceling transportation projects? Representative Beard said yes. So you might want to also have a conversation with him about that if you're laying this over till tomorrow in light of the issue that Representative Scalzi raised about the appropriateness of this committee on really policy. If you're giving yourself some time before tomorrow, you might want to have a conversation with Representative Beard as well.
Well, I have talked to Representative Beard to some degree, and yes, he could ask for those bills to come back. But once the bonds are canceled, he's really talking about a bill that almost no longer exists anymore, is what we decided. But the Drazkowski amendment, we will lay over till tomorrow, and we'll talk to some people and get that a little bit clearer. We may not like the outcome, or we may like it. I don't know. But at least we're going to lay that over till tomorrow. So House File 1232, as amended by the First Amendment, is up before us, and the chair will lay over. Amendment 805. Representative Carlson.
Before we would vote tomorrow, then are we going to at some point hear some testimony? Because I think as we arrive at a decision, we're going to need some information presented at some point.
Representative Carlson, we're going to continue to take testimony on House File 1232 as amended for the duration of our time. When we come back tomorrow, we're going to do the flood mitigation. We're also going to bring up the governor's bill. There were a couple things that the governor wanted to add to his bill. So we'll bring it up, discuss it, add it, lay it over.
And I guess, Mr. Chairman, what I was really referring to was, will they be able to address any concerns that they might have about the Drazkowski amendment at this point, or are we waiting until tomorrow?
Representative Carlson, we'll do the best we can to accommodate the time. I think with the snowstorm coming, we might not have anybody here tomorrow. I'm not sure. It might. Well, it's coming up north, and they're talking about it here, too, so I don't know. I'm not a weatherman, but we will offer some time, yes.
Because I think some of the questions, Mr. Chairman, that have come up
need to be answered at some point before we vote on the amendment, however you choose to do that.
Yeah. So, to House File 1232 as amended, any discussion? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. How does canceling all these bonds provide jobs?
Could you repeat your question?
How does 1232 as amended, how does that provide jobs for Minnesota?
Well, I could use the same question with how bonding bills that we pass do create jobs when they're not shovel ready. Now, some of these, yes, the Central Corridor, Subdivision 3 of the bill does have a Central Corridor in there, and they will stop that, so that will have an effect there, yes. But it will also save a lot of money in the end. The most of these are ones that would not be ready to create a job until much later in the summer or even a year later. So that is debatable as to whether this creates a job once the thaw hits and summer arrives. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So your answer is it's a question of when rather than if there's jobs created with some of these appropriations.
Representative Hansen, almost always when you pass a bonding bill, you will create a job. It depends when that job is created, how long it takes to actually get the shovel in the ground, get the permits, et cetera, et cetera. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So canceling these, we would stop jobs then if we're canceling the appropriation.
Not necessarily, Representative Hansen. Representative Scott, Representative Hansen, are you?
I was just back on the Central Corridor, though. That construction has started there. So if I was more specific on my question, that there's construction occurring. So that would involve stopping work that's currently underway. Is that correct?
Representative Hansen, that in all likelihood, logical to say that it would cancel some jobs for a short period of time. Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then I'm just, as a add-on to Representative Hansen's question, then that work that's been incurred, how would that be paid if the project is stopped? I mean, if you've been down 4th Street lately, I mean, that's a major hole in the ground. So somebody's got to pay that. Somebody's got to pay the unemployment costs.
Well, Representative Scalzi, I don't know that if those people would be put on unemployment. They may have another project going on somewhere else. We are getting into highway season where things are going to break, so I can't say that that's going to have an impact yet. Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, the problem here is that, I mean, this is no newsflash. This is Minnesota. You know, and these are 20, some of these are 2010 bonding items. You know, we prepare in the winter and we construct in the summer. That's what we do in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. And we're going to hear from people who've had projects in the works. And in my area, I've got to fight for my area here, too. We've got people hired. We've got people that are ready to go. We've got bids to let. The public reviews have been taken. I mean, we've spent a lot of money. And so there's money that's not going to be returned, or money that's not going to be, well, we've got to pay it. Somebody's got to pay it. These people don't work for free. I don't know. I just, we're a trusted partner with our citizens in our state, and I think this is breaking the trust. When we tell somebody in 2010, you've got your money. I mean, we're working on a bridge in Little Canada. It's half up. Lucky thing, it's you're not canceling that because we'd have half a bridge. You know, we and that gained federal money. When we have trust that people place in the state of Minnesota, and we tell them in August of 2010, here's your money, it's there. And to tell you the truth, this state is not a crazy, wacky state. We fulfill our obligations, and we're right now about to break the trust with the citizens in the state of Minnesota. We're about to tell them, no matter what we say, don't you ever trust us again, because you can't have faith in your state. And I'm sure we're going to hear that from our testifiers, but we don't have a lot of debt. We rank in the middle of the nation with the debt per ratio and per capita. And I don't know, I think we're playing political games here. and I think it's a waste of time, and I think that we have to get back to trusting our state and not reneging on our promises.
Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I actually want to go one step further. When we talk about the construction that has already started, that means contracts have been let. And there may be contracts that have already been signed, sealed, and delivered, so to speak, where the construction actually hasn't started yet, but you still have the contractual obligation. So I think the risk here is lawsuits all over the place if we violate those contracts. So I think that's a very serious question that Representative Scalzi has brought up in terms of the trust. It's not only the trust philosophically, but there's a legal obligation as a result of those contracts.
Well, Representative Carlson, I'm not going to say you're right, I'm not going to say you're wrong, but you do bring up some questions that I want to ask some people when this gets to Ways and Means. There's going to be some questions that need answers.
Mr. Chairman, one of the points that I would make is that I think those questions should be resolved here and not in Ways and Means. I'm on Ways and Means, so I get to have some say there as well. I think truly when we look at the purpose of this committee, we should get the answer to those questions and resolve those issues here before a bill moves forward.
Well, Representative Carlson, you're partially right, but if it comes to the thought of or threat of lawsuits, the discussion of lawsuits, I believe that's more for the Ways and Means Committee than it is for this committee. We're doing something today that in Ways and Means Committee will give us $70 million to help set all the targets. That's our goal here today, combined with the bill we passed last week. Now, if, as you say, a few jobs might stop, somebody goes on unemployment, Representative Scalzi mentioned that, Representative Carlson, you mentioned possible lawsuits, that would be something more for the Ways and Means Committee, not this committee. I mean, it might be an action that this committee took to get there, but it would be up to Ways and Means to discover if that's going to be a problem that they need to make adjustments for.
Mr. Chairman, I would only say that that's, in my view, not really the role of Ways and Means. That's a fiscal committee. When you start talking about the legal obligations and so on, there are other committees in the legislature that would probably more appropriately deal with those. But I think before the bill would leave here, the members of this committee could certainly hear testimony in terms of whether or not contracts would be broken. And if you break a contract, that means that the person who you've broke that contract with has a legal recourse. And that's what I meant by potential lawsuits. I mean, you're in the contracting business. You know, if you had a contract with somebody, and especially if you'd started the project, but even if you had the contract and hadn't started, you've got a contract. And in this country, we've put a high priority on honoring contracts, and the courts have, as a general rule, and you and I both have been here for a number of years, know that the courts will uphold a business person's or an individual's right under a contract.
Well, Representative Carlson, this I do know. With projects that may be underway, what we're canceling is the money that's unencumbered. Now, I'm not going to get into, Ms. Dyson would probably know more about unencumbered money than I do, but I know that some of this money isn't unencumbered. More will be encumbered as this bill progresses, so that dollar amount will change somewhat. Until we actually pass this bill and the governor signs it, do we get to a final dollar amount? So they will be paid what they've done so far.
Yeah, and as I said, Mr. Chairman, at the beginning, I wanted to carry it one step beyond where Representative Scalzi went, mm-hmm. because you can have contracts that are signed and agreed to, and there are certain performances that are expected as a result of that. From our perspective, payment, from the contractor's perspective, maybe dates when a project has to be completed and that kind of thing. And so if there's a contract in place, maybe it does go back to whether it's encumbered or unencumbered, and maybe that question can be answered. But I think we have to be very careful as we move forward, and I was only saying that I think those questions should be resolved in this committee. And then if we can't resolve them, then probably the appropriate committee, which I don't think really would be Ways and Means, in terms of when you get into the legal questions.
I'll take that into consideration. Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to remind folks that we do have a huge budget problem here, and we're elected to solve it. And that doesn't mean just solving it for this biennium. It means into the future. And I think the public fully understands that many of the operational costs on some of these transit corridors are just not sustainable. So I think we also need to take into consideration the folks that may suffer business loss along this corridor. And we talked about job creation and that sort of thing, but how many jobs might this save if those businesses are saved? So I think we just need to look at a lot of other things other than just how many jobs is this going to create, and if we stop this project now, what's going to happen? Because I believe it will save us money in the long run.
Representative Draskowski, did you have something to say about your amendment that I temporarily laid over and will bring back up before us so you can make a comment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, if there's still room, we could remove the uncertainty and delete Clause 2 in the amendment. That's what I would offer, Mr. Chair.
So with regard to, I'm bringing the A5 amendment back up before us. And would you tell us the line it's on from where to where?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move to delete Clause 2 beginning on line 1.10 through 1.15. That would be
that?
My oral amendment to the amendment, Mr. Chair.
Yes. Well, we'll incorporate that in the amendment. Would you like to speak to it?
I would. Members, this removes the uncertainty that was created around the status of the Supreme Court or the District Court case that is referenced in the original amendment. And it does allow us, members, to protect the interests of businesses along this particular route, something I think is very important. And it also makes certain that we have the support of the federal government in paying for this environmental impact statement before we move further ahead on the project. I'd appreciate your support for the amendment.
Discussion. Seeing no discussion, all those in favor of the 05 amendment, say aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Amendment is adopted. To the bill. We're going to start bringing some witnesses down so they get as much time as we can possibly give them. So we're going to start out with Kristen Hansen. And you take the gavel.
Chairman Howes, members of the committee, my name is Kristen Hansen. I'm the Assistant Commissioner of Debt Management at Minnesota Department of Management and Budget. I just have some just brief comments on the bill. As I see, there's other folks waiting to testify. And I just wanted to remind you, as has been alluded to already in the earlier bill discussion, of the state's capital investment guidelines that were established or revamped 2 years ago. And these capital investment guidelines and internal policies that we have help maintain our strong bond rating when we bring our bonds to market. So the capital investment guidelines, and this has been distributed in a handout that's prepared by House Research as well, is that the total tax-supported principal outstanding shall be 3.25 or less of total state personal income. The total amount of principal, both issued and authorized but unissued, for state general obligations, state moral obligations, equipment capital leases, and real estate capital leases are not to exceed 6% of state personal income. And we are currently under those guidelines at this point in time. And then 40% of our general obligation debt shall be due within 5 years and 70% within 10 years, if consistent with the useful life of the assets being financed or current market conditions. In addition, we have refunding guidelines that have been in place for almost 30 years. And that says that when we do a refunding, that our goal is to get 5% in aggregate present value savings and 3% present value savings by maturity. So this has been in place for almost three decades. And so we are very supportive of the concept of refundings. As you are probably aware, the state did a large refunding back in the fall of 2010. It was a $900 million bond issue. It was done for budgetary purposes, and it saved the state $100 million in this current biennium. And we continue to monitor the opportunities for refundings, dependent on market condition. Our concerns that we have about the bill is, based on our guidelines that we have been using, and like I said, this is important. The rating agencies really look highly on the state of Minnesota's financial management and debt management, and that's why we're able to maintain the high rating and obtain favorable interest rates in the market. But a recent refunding analysis that was done by the state's financial advisor about 2 days ago is only showing a savings to the general fund of about $18 million. And that includes both refunding the various purpose general obligation bonds as well as the trunk highway bonds. So it's a cumulative savings. And I do know that there are different assumptions that have been floating around, and we can't speak to what those assumptions are, but dependent on the market condition of the day, what the interest rates are, as well as the investment rates on the escrow, and what maturities of the bond issues are being considered to be refinancing, and what the kind of savings thresholds that are being shown, that's just current market conditions. But like I say, we do continually monitor the opportunities for refundings to save the state's general fund. We're concerned about allocating savings between refunding and canceling projects. A refunding, you actually see the dollar savings. It's a very easy, straightforward calculation that you can see where the savings is going to be. But if you do cancel a dollar's worth of bonding, that's that is a savings that's spread over the life of the bond issue. So it's not dollar for dollar in the same year. So that's just an important concept to know. It's being amortized over the life of the issue. And then we're also kind of concerned about taking the decision-making powers away from the policymakers, you, the legislature, and the governor, to decide on what projects should be canceled.
Thank you, Ms. Hansen. Any questions for Ms. Hansen? Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We tend never to have bond sales. We have one exception, I think, in recent years, but we haven't had bond sales during session. We've tended to have the timing different. What about refinancing? The timing of that?
Chairman, Representative Hausman, we traditionally, as you said, do not hold bond sales during the legislative session. We have done so once in the past. It was in 2007. At that time, we were showing a $1 billion surplus in the current biennium and a $2 billion surplus in the second biennium. Should you bring this to market with, an unbalanced budget at this point in time and kind of differing of opinions on how that budget is going to be, reconciled, to present that to the rating agencies is a very concerning to me, because it's very important for us to maintain the state's bond issues and to have to tell that story that we really don't know where the budget's going to be in the next biennium, because at this point in time we don't.
And Madam Chair, I thought it was important to help people understand that we don't just have a bond rating that stays in place forever. Every sale, there's a rating for that sale. And so that's one of the reasons why we've been hesitant to have bond sales during a session when we're debating. Further, my understanding is the timing of this is we would use that anticipated savings, and you're challenging the number, you're believing the number is much lower, to actually balance our budget this year. And so we would have to do it, I'm assuming, if that really is a legitimate balancing of the budget, we would have to do that refinancing during this legislative session.
Ms. Hansen.
Madam Chair, Representative Hausman, a couple things to address the issues. The bill currently, the way it's drafted, looks at this as savings going into effect for the next biennium. So it talks about the next biennium. So as the market changes, there will probably be an opportunity to do a refunding. Of course, the savings will not be known until, you bring bonds to market, because it is dependent on market conditions. So in that point, we will continue to monitor those. And every time you bring an issue to market, the bonds are rated. And Moody's Investor Service just released a report, I think it was late last week, that is taking kind of an overall look at state ratings and putting a negative watch on all of them, just kind of a blanket statement. They've done so for the past, this is now the third year in a row. So the rating agencies are taking a careful look at what's happening with state budgets. They are aware of what the economies are going on across the country. You know, they're adding rating criteria about into the process about other areas. So you are correct on kind of all those counts. And I know this bill does say for the next biennium, which, like I said, we will continue to monitor, and there will probably be an opportunity, especially as you get closer to the call date on the bonds, refundings tend to work better.
Follow-up, Representative Hausman? Anybody else? Questions for Ms. Hansen? Thank you, Ms. Hansen.
Thank you.
Next, if you're here to be a witness on behalf of Central Corridor, you can come forward one at a time, please. And if the testifiers could keep their comments to brief, that would be great. We've got quite a few people on the schedule here. Please identify yourself for the record.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. My name is Pat Bourne. I'm the Regional Administrator of the Metropolitan Council. With me is Mark Furman, the Project Director. Let me just make a couple brief comments. I know your time is limited, and then Mark, who is the expert on the project, can both answer questions about the project and answer questions, if there are any, about the status of the lawsuit, if you'd like to take that up today. Metropolitan Council opposes this bill as it relates to the Central Corridor. Canceling the remaining bonds does withdraw the state support, the remaining state support for this project, which in turn results, we think, in the withdrawal of the federal government's support for this project, which then effectively cancels the project based on the way the bill is currently written. You should be aware that there are 3,400 jobs, local jobs, that are going to be created or have been created, and there are tens of local contractors that are involved in this project. Many of you probably drive through the project on your way here or see the result of that today. This is an actively constructed project today. There are significant wind down of construction and other project contracts that Mark will speak to today and answer questions about. Please be aware, too, that the Metropolitan Council is highly confident that the federal government is going to complete its approval of the full funding grant agreement within a month or so. We can't give you an exact date today, but we are very confident of that. And we also remain very confident that that grant agreement will be fully funded by Congress and the President in their ensuing budget decisions. This project has and we expect will remain the number one ranked project in the United States. Projects of its kind, even if there is some uncertainty, which we all understand there is, about federal appropriations, we expect that based on history relating to projects like this, that not only will this project achieve its full funding grant agreement, it will be funded.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Bourne. And you have about 2.5 minutes. Furman.
Madam Chair, Mark Furman, Central Corridor LRT Project Director for the Metropolitan Council. Been working on this particular project since 2006 when the federal government approved its entry to begin its design, as well as the last 4 years while the federal government has continued to express its support for the project as we move towards that full funding grant agreement next month. Madam Chair and members, I would simply add to what has already been said that we have all the major contracts, five major contracts in place for this project. For the 7 miles of light rail in St. Paul, the 3 miles of light rail in Minneapolis, for all of our systems work, all the electrical work to power the trains, as well as our operation and maintenance facility to house and maintain the trains. And the fifth contract is for the light rail vehicles. All five contracts have been executed by the Metropolitan Council. They were competed last year and awarded by the end of last year. The contract have the contractors have been given direction to proceed with that work at a value of $150 million to date. We'd be happy to respond to any questions, Madam Chair.
Okay, members, what I think we're going to do in the interest of time is hold the questions until the end, until everyone's had an opportunity to testify. So we've got your name down, Representative Hausman, and anybody else will be taking names down. Thank you, sir and gentlemen. Thank you. Ramsey County Commissioner Jim McDonough, if you're in the House. St. Paul Chamber, you're on deck.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Jim McDonough, Ramsey County Commissioner. I chair the Ramsey County Regional Rail Authority, and I also represent Ramsey County on the County Transit Improvement Board. I'm here to speak both on the canceling of the Central Corridor bonds and then also on the 8-5 amendment. First, on the canceling of the Central Corridor bonds, I really have to emphasize here that these projects are long-term projects. And I understand there are people at this table, there are people in this current legislature that did not support or did not have the opportunity to weigh in on whether this project went forward or didn't went forward. But the reality is this project has gone forward and went forward with Governor Plenty's support. Governor Plenty supported the bonds for this project for us to continue to move forward. This has moved forward under the Bush administration, a Republican president, and under the Obama administration, a Democratic president. This has moved forward with business support from the chambers. This has moved forward with support from labor. It has moved forward with the support of mayors, city council members, and county commissioners. A very broad-based coalition to keep this project moving forward. The reality is I heard conversations earlier in your discussions about return on investment. The reality is the state's share of this project is 10%. That means it leverages $9. $9 your state bonds will leverage. $3 of that will come from sales tax that the County Transit Improvement Board did. $1 of that will come from Hennepin and Ramsey County. And $5 of that will come in from the federal government. Over and above that, Mark Furman from the Met Council talked about the project somewhat. Out of that project budget, $300 million of that will be wages. Out of that project, $300 million of that will be wages that go to families to pay for health care, mortgages, to put food on the table, to educate their kids. Out of that will be about $16 to $20 million of Minnesota income tax coming back to this legislature for you to allocate in other areas. We've brought together some consultants, and we spent over 2 years taking a look at the return on investment in this corridor, what this transit investment is going to do beyond the rails. We brought in consultants Boonestrow and Springstead to take a look at the financial piece of this thing.
One more minute, sir.
And the potential investment in this corridor for private dollars will meet or exceed $6 billion in the next 30 years, $6 billion. I'm going to talk a little bit about the A5 amendment while I have my time left here. This is just a disastrous amendment. Have this deadline of April 1st is absolutely unattainable. The full funding grant or the federal process out right now allows a 60-day comment period from the congressional committees. That doesn't end until April 6th. And even for the federal government, this is quite speedy. They've committed to getting us the full funding grant agreement 2 to 3 weeks from that April 6th date. So this is just a blatant attempt to stop a major project in this community that's been supported by business, been supported by many people. It's taken a long time for us to get to this point. I understand there are people that don't support it, but there are many, many more people in this community that support this. They're depending on this. We have people working right now. There are people looking forward to the day in 2014 when this project opens, and we need to keep this project moving. Thank you, Madam
Thank you,
Chair.
Mr. McDonough.
Thank you, committee members.
St. Paul Chamber, Zach Schwartz, and Michael Belock. Is that right, Belock? I really botched it, didn't I? I'm sorry.
It's Blaine.
Try to keep your comments brief to about 3 minutes the two of you. Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Michael Blaine. I'm here with Zach Schwartz, representing the St. Paul Area Chamber of Commerce, in complete support for the Central Corridor Light Rail Transit Project and specifically in opposition to subdivision 3 of section 1. And I'm going to turn it over to Zach. He'll make a few brief comments, and we'll respect your time. Thank you.
As Michael said, my name is Zach Schwartz. I'm with the St. Paul Area Chamber of Commerce. The St. Paul Area Chamber of Commerce, on behalf of our members, continues to support the Central Corridor Light Rail project and urges you to preserve the state's funding commitment for the Central Corridor project. This project is not only just a city or a county project or priority, but it is a business priority. The availability of transportation options increases a customer's access to business, increases employees' access to their jobs, and increases the region's businesses' ability to both attract and retain talented employees. We believe that this project will provide significantly more transit options for our commuters, increase access to both of the downtowns, and create economic development opportunities for our region and strengthen the long-term vitality and high quality of life in the entire metro region and in our competitiveness as a region.
Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen. We will let you have a seat, and if there are any other questions directed towards you, we'll have that opportunity later. Eric Carlson, City of Indra Grove Heights. And Michelle Furr from Kalamazoo, you're on deck. And Peter as well.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. George Torville, Mayor of Indra Grove Heights, and we're here to speak on the Rock Island Swing Bridge, the regional trail impacts. And again, we are opposing the loss of $1 million. We have been working on this project for about 3 years in order to take a look at working with the legislature, Dakota County, Metro Council, and also the City of Indra Grove Heights, and also the regional trail as a federal program. And part of the bridge development was to connect to the regional trail as part of Dakota County's project. The original program was a 3 to 5 year project. We were given from Metro Council, also the county, the city, and in taking a look at the $1 million, we would have probably not gone forward with the project. We wouldn't have been able to put the $1 million on the backs of the citizens of Indra Grove Heights. Just as a matter of point, just so that you know, we're not an LGA city. We get no homestead credit. We took a look at this project as regional significance. We also took a look at it as a redevelopment project for the Concord Street area. I think a lot of you have had the opportunity to visit the site. And again, we were the original agreement that we had last year that was passed was we were given until 2015 to spend the money. We understand the plight of the state of the deficit. We understand fully. We just took a look that in the agreement we were told that we were to encumber by 2015. We also did lose some time from Mother Nature with the flood last summer. We also made national news, unfortunately, because of the fire. Wasn't our fault. That was caused by the contractor. We are continuing. In fact, they've been able to work through the winter months on the decking. We also have pulled everything back because of the potential spring flood. The interpretation that we're not sure on is that on the $1 million has to be encumbered by July or contracts let, is that we will move forward to make some of that happen, but we've been trying to be prudent in taking a look at matching up with the county, Metro Council, also with DNR on all of the things. We had an office in Senator Metzen and Representative Atkins put together, and there were 14 agencies that were at that meeting, including the Attorney General.
About 30 seconds, sir.
And I think I may turn it over to Eric to see if there's anything that I forgot. But the piece to it is that if we would have not had the $1 million as part of the project, we probably would have relinquished and not gone forward with the project. Now it will put a damaging blow to it, and we'll find it we want to meet, we want to do everything. We've been abiding by the contract as laid out to the city, and I'll stand for questions.
Thank you, gentlemen. We're going to have that at the end here. We're going to call up the folks from Como Zoo.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Michelle Furr. I'm the campus manager and director for Como Park Zoo and Conservatory. And with me today is Wendy Rubin, the board chair of Como Friends, the nonprofit partner. Last year, Como welcomed 2.2 million visitors from every corner of the state of Minnesota. 84% of them came from outside of this capital city. Como is a free destination that delivers a quality, world-class experience at a low cost. We have admission free for the visitors, and our average cost per guest is under $3, compared to similar institutions that are averaging over $16 per visitor. Como Zoo is on schedule and on budget with the asset preservation project and last year's bonding bill, doing exactly what we said we would do with the pre-designed design and work in order to begin construction this year, with completion in 2013. I have to be honest, we were a bit surprised with the action of this bill and wanted to share the progress we've made since receiving the fully executed grant agreement with Metropolitan Council back in August, just 7 months ago. Do you have a timeline in your packets that you can also see this as I briefly talk about the timeline? We began an accelerated and aggressive timeline to begin construction this fall. We are doing it in 9 months, which typically takes 12 to 18. Last fall, we finalized executed an agreement with architects to provide design work for Gorilla Forest, and we completed schematic design in December. In January, we've executed a contract for construction management and started the design development phase, which was completed just last week. We'll be receiving construction documents in 2 weeks, and that phase will go through July. And in addition, we would be doing some early bid package for work on the existing building, which would happen this summer before major construction. We are on schedule to public bid, review, and award contracts for this project in August and September and start construction in October. As somebody had mentioned about jobs, all of these contracts we're doing are local jobs right now that are happening. This project for asset preservation at Como was phase two of projects. The total project investment was $28.2 million that was leveraged by Como, the partnership with the state of Minnesota, along with the private sector through Como Friends, the nonprofit partner for Como Park Zoo and Conservatory.
About 1 minute, yep.
The loss of this funding will significantly impact their work, and I'll pass it over to Wendy.
Good afternoon. Thank you. I am Wendy Rubin, board chair of Como Friends, a nonprofit of private individuals and representatives of corporations who support Como Zoo and Conservatory. We are dedicated to promoting, supporting, preserving and enhancing the zoo and conservatory. In the 10 years of our existence, we have raised over $26 million to enhance the Como campus through capital improvements, operations, programs, and other exhibit improvements. I'm here to answer any questions you may have about our relationship. We strongly oppose this bill. We have a strong public-private partnership. And as a private citizen, I have to say that I feel a deal's a deal, and what about our trust in government? Thank you very much.
Thank you, ladies. Appreciate it. If you're with the Metropolitan Park District at all, or representative from there, I think that might encompass several of you. Please come forward, and we'll give you about 8 minutes cumulative time. It looks like someone from Dakota County, Anoka County, Ramsey, Minneapolis Park and Rec. Please state your name for the record. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. My name is Greg Mack. I'm Director of Parks and Recreation for Ramsey County, and we are one of the 10 implementing agencies for the regional park system. Specifically, Ramsey County has three projects that would potentially be canceled under the line item 1.23, the $10.4 million that's identified there. All three of the projects that are there are under current contracts with or engagements with construction managers. I brought a set of plans for you today just to illustrate that this is what we have as shovel ready. The bids are being taken right now. There's 50 pages of documentation on the plan sheets. This is a plan that's been designed by small business, both the engineering and architectural. We anticipate that, given the scope of this work, it'll engage over 15 small businesses in construction. These are picnic shelters and site work that will engage typically what would be a house building kind of contractor. So they're smaller scale, but the kind of work that people are looking for today. And we know that these projects can be all under contract and committed by July 1 of this year, and if that's so, we are proceeding on that basis. Thank you.
Sir, please identify yourself for the record.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Steve Sullivan. I'm the director for Dakota County Parks. On behalf of the 10 Metropolitan Regional Park agencies, we and Dakota County, we ask also that you reconsider House File 1252 and not cancel the $10.4 million that was bonded to the Metropolitan Council for Parks Improvements. Dakota County has four projects that are within that bond, the 2010 bond. Of that, it equates to $1.1 million, and Met Council is to match with $220,000. The state bonds of $1.1 million further leverage $2.7 million of other funds. And for every dollar of state funds, there's $2.36 of other funds that are part of these four projects. With the loss of those state bonds, we would lose a $1 million federal transportation grant because we'd be unable to complete a trail project along the Mississippi River. All four projects are shovel ready. Three of the four projects are well underway, having over 18 months of process. We've had open houses, we've had public hearings with the Dakota County Board, and we've had meetings with the cities and approvals on two of these four projects. I could hold Greg's plans. We have two projects. The construction documents are prepared. We'll be looking at bidding them this summer. One project has a feasibility study done, and we have proposals that we're receiving from consultants on April 4th to do the construction documents. So there's been a lot of investment in time and dollars. Projects have advanced. The state bonding funds have leveraged quite a bit of other money. The loss of those 2010 funds would result in the collapse of all four projects, the loss of the time and that expense, and the loss of the $1 million grant. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Blaska, is it from Anoka County?
Madam Chair, representatives, my name is Karen Blaska. I'm the park planner for Anoka County. And I, like my colleagues, have been very busy getting these projects going. We have $1.8 million in grant agreements for three projects. One is currently under construction up at Lake George Regional Park. And then we have two others that we're actually opening bids on tomorrow. So we should have fully executed construction contracts by mid-April, and construction will be going as soon as they can start digging in the ground. So I guess I would like the committee to reconsider this bill as well. Anoka County would not want to take the risk of encumbering the expenses for these projects if the funding is going to be removed.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, and we will open it up. We have Jennifer Ringel from Minneapolis Park and Rec, and Jane Miller as well. Are you still here? No, thank you. Okay, is that it then? Okay, we'll take
Okay, the chair is going to move page 1, subdivision 3, to delete that from the bill. That's the central corridor LRT. Any discussion on that oral amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. To the bill as amended. Any discussion? Representative Hackbarth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I briefly had a discussion with you, and I'm sorry, but I've got to say something.
Subdivision 4, I have great concerns about this. I was with you when we wanted to remove some of these issues some of these bonds that are sitting around. They haven't been used, et cetera, et cetera. I think that's a good thing to do. But I have some real concerns about removing and canceling these bonds that were just left in 2010, particularly on these parks. And now I find from Anoka County that one of these projects is in my district, and it's going to be left. So I have some real concerns with this, Mr. Chairman. I wasn't going to say anything unless Anoka County had come up here, and I just said before the committee that one of these projects is in my district. I have some real concerns about this, and I hope, you know, I'm going to help you get this bill out of here today, but I hope you take the leadership, my concern about canceling bonds that were just let in 2012 and passed by the legislature. I don't get it. I don't understand where we're going with this, but please take your concerns to leadership. My concerns to
Representative
leadership.
Hackbarth, I definitely will do that, and I do have some concern too. Any other discussion? Representative Hauser.
Mr. Chair, I'm confused. Somehow I was thinking you were holding the bill over till tomorrow.
When I laid over the Druskowski Amendment, I said I would hold it until tomorrow and bring the Druskowski Amendment back up. Since he amended the amendment, we put it in, then no, we didn't have to wait till tomorrow. We'll vote for the bill.
Okay.
Vote the bill at 4:30.
Could I then ask one technical question?
Yes, you may.
That it's an unintended consequence, and I don't know if anyone's here with this, but to Mrs. Dyson, I believe, if we cancel Como Park, what is the effect on the Minnesota Zoo? I recall the language we wrote into the bill. Don't we affect more than Como Zoo?
Ms. Dyson.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Hausman, there was some back and forth between the representatives of the zoo and MMB on that, and as I understand it, the Minnesota Zoo just needed certification from the city of St. Paul that the funds had been committed for the Como Zoo, that they were fully funded, and that released the money for the Minnesota Zoo, and so the requirements that were in the bill or in the law for the Minnesota Zoo to get its funding have been fulfilled, and this would not affect the Minnesota Zoo.
Representative Hausman.
So is that a catch-22? We put the language in, but we let the one get their money and then we cancel the other anyway?
Representative Hausman, I don't think so, but Representative Hanson.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate what you did with Subdivision 3, but this bill is still a job-killing bill, and I move to lay it on the table and ask for a roll call.
Representative Hanson moves that we lay House File 1232 as amended on the table. He asks for a roll call vote. Clerk will take the roll. Any discussion first? Seeing no discussion, the clerk will take the roll.
House?
No.
Scott?
No. Banyan?
No.
Bills?
No.
Carlson?
Aye.
Clark?
Yes.
Druskowski?
No.
Fabian?
No.
Hansen?
Yes.
Hackbarth?
No.
Hausman?
Yes.
Hayden? Hayden? Creasel? Lanning. Mellon. Myra. No. Nornis.
No.
Rukavina. Scalzi.
Yes.
Swazinski.
No.
Ward.
There being 10 ayes or 10 nays and 5 ayes, the motion does not prevail. Representative Hanson.
Mr. Chair, I'd ask for a roll call on the bill when we vote on the bill.
Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just have to make one last stab at this metropolitan area regional parks. In line with what Representative Hackbarth mentioned, the metro area is 55% of the state. Of the population. And all these cities used to fight over who's going to get this and who's going to get that. And you know, they all got together a number of years ago and they worked out a whole formula. It's just an amazing thing to watch in government, that all of these communities who had been working against each other were all of a sudden working together. And they agree every year based on population and other factors. And these are really the state parks in the metro area. That's really what they are. It's heavily subsidized by the property taxes. They work this deal out, and they all agree, and they let these bids. And we're taking away their trust in their state government for a bonding bill that was passed in 2010, and Governor Pawlenty was in favor of it. I just can't believe that we're even talking about this. I'm just shocked. I've never seen the state of Minnesota do something like this. And we've had terrible deficits before. I've never seen the state try to renege on their citizens like we've done in this bill. These were dollars that were said they were granted to people, and people have had faith in their state. This is just the most awful thing. And whoever's doing this, I don't blame you, Mr. Chair, because I don't think this is you personally that's doing this. But whoever's doing this, I don't think you're doing yourselves any favor. I just think it's just a black mark, and there's a lot of people that are severely impacted by this. I just have to talk for Metro Parks, and Representative Hackbarth did a good job. He's carried the bill. You're in the majority. He's taken the lead on it. He's done a wonderful job, and I thank him for that. I used to carry the bill. This just breaks my heart.
Representative Carlson, did you
have... Yeah, Mr. Chairman, just very quickly. Okay,
we're right on deadline, so...
I know, but how does the bill now as it stands after your amendment interact with the Druskowski amendment relative to the Central Corridor? Because he amended his, but he still some of his bill was or amendment was standing.
The way I understand it, Representative Carlson, the Druskowski amendment pretty much did what Subdivision 3 did, except in a different way.
That's with what remains. That's my interpretation as well. So just wanted to clarify that.
At this point, too.
And Mr. Chairman, what's the motion before us?
I haven't renewed my motion quite yet, but the motion would be that House File 1232, as amended, would be passed with recommendation and sent to Ways and Means.
And, Mr. Chairman, I would like to also make a motion.
Okay.
And I would like to move that the bill be re-referred to the Civil Law Committee.
Okay. Perfect.
Because of the contractual discussions that we had earlier.
Representative Carlson has moved that this bill be referred to the Civil Law Committee.
Yep.
Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
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 Motion does not prevail. The chair is going to make one more amendment. Representative Scott may be the chair of this committee tomorrow, but the chair is going to delete Subdivision 4. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Chair will renew his motion that House File 1232, as amended, be sent to the Ways and Means Committee. And I believe a roll call was asked for, so the clerk will take the roll.
House.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Fanyan.
Aye.
Bills.
Aye.
Carlson.
No.
Clark.
No.
Druskowski.
Aye.
Fabian.
Aye.
Hansen.
No.
Hackbarth.
Aye.
Hausman.
No.
Hayden. Kreisel. Lanning. Mellon. Myra.
Yes.
Norness.
Yes.
Rukavina. Scalzi.
No.
Swazinski?
Yes.
Ward?
There are 10 ayes and 5 nays. The bill is passed as amended. For tomorrow, members, we're going to bring up the governor's bonding bill that was laid over earlier. There are a couple of items that the governor wanted to include it, so we'll include those items in the bill, then lay it over again. And then we'll do the flood mitigation, and we'll have a lot of testimony on flood mitigation and lay that over also.
And Representative Carlson. Mr. Chairman, would it be possible for us to have a brief discussion then tomorrow as to where we stand as a result of the new budget resolution relative to debt service?
We might be able to do that tomorrow, Representative Carlson. Might. I'll talk to leadership and find out what the numbers are. Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Meeting is adjourned.